Alrighty, everybody, welcome back. Nathan, welcome back.
Thank you.
To Daniel. Another episode of the Trade Waiters Podcast, the comic book club where we read a different trade paperback every single week.
Is that what we do?
We sure do.
Oh man, it's been so long, I can't remember.
I know, I can't remember. I forgot that we podcast today, yeah. or at all.
I forgot how we do the intro. Do we say our names? Do we say a fun fact about ourselves?
I'm Daniel. You're Nathan. We're brothers. We read comics.
All right.
It's a comic book club.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if I said that already. But we just got back from Greece.
Back at it again.
Bunch of greasy boys. Can't get the grease off of me.
Yeah, there's still so much grease on me.
Yeah, dude.
We're there for a couple days, I would say.
Uh-huh.
Dude, it was such a pain in the ass getting back, though.
It was a pain in the ass getting around. It was a pain in the ass, like, getting, yeah, coming, traveling was a pain in the dickhole.
Yeah, traveling kind of sucks, but being there was kind of cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Once we got there, like, all right, maybe it was worth it, maybe not.
And then you come back and you're like, why did I even do any of that?
It just could have been easier, but.
We were the victim of the Southwest flight cancellations.
Dude, you know what I, like, kind of realized?
What?
Like, how different. Like our American Airlines flight was compared to like our British Airways flight was.
Yeah.
Like the snacks and stuff mm-hmm. were like super different.
The American snacks are top tier.
Yeah. Like British Airways, they had crisps and crumpets or whatever.
They were like,
they had like a bunch of like snacks I've never heard of. And I looked at the list and stuff like that. And I was thinking like, do like airlines just like pander to like whoever they're flying? Like, is there a Mexican Airlines? Where they have like Takis and shit like that.
They give you just like chips and guac.
They have like those like spicy candies and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. Dude, an airline with Mexican candy would be so good.
Yeah. Like the bathrooms would just be hit up the entire time.
Yeah.
Always occupied.
Yeah, that's true. It wouldn't be the bathroom there. You wouldn't want to be sitting near the bathroom.
Dude, oh man, sitting near the bathroom sucked.
We sat near the bathroom the whole time, I felt like.
I had two flights where I was in like the very back to where you couldn't recline.
Oh man.
And for some reason that row doesn't have a window. So you're just like in the corner. You have like a corner seat.
That's so funny.
You know? And it's the fucking worst. I guess it's okay for like sleeping on the wall or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it just blew a lot.
That's crazy.
And each time it was like a 4-hour flight.
I love flights because it gives me an opportunity to just read comics uninterrupted, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I did a lot of that in these flights.
I did not do as much as I was hoping just because like of my insane motion sickness.
Yeah.
I was able to watch like movies because that's like a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
But like if I get like a little bit of turbulence, I have to like stop, you know?
Yeah.
And then I get like super tired. And so I like might sleep on it too. So
yeah. I read tons of comics, which I'm going to be talking about in the poll lists when
we
get there.
We got a huge episode today. We got double the news.
Yeah.
We got double the poll list. Still one book, though.
Yeah, only one book. As part of our spooky week, we are obviously reading Batman Arkham Asylum by Grant Morrison and Dave McKean. Very, very cool stuff. But we have to do the news first, but we have all sorts of time codes for the segments that we do in the description. If this is your first time listening or first time actually listening to what I'm saying, there's time codes in the description that I'm pretty sure are there every time. So you can feel free to jump around if you don't care about the news or whatever. But if you care about the news, we're going to get into that right now.
Should we just talk about like the biggest news first?
I mean, I think one of the ones that went under the radar. Did you hear that Saga's coming back?
Saga is coming back, Nathan.
Oh my god, it's
all over
back.
It was shoved down my throat and in my face.
Did you hear about that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little book that's coming back.
It got a little bit missed, you know? But yeah, Saga is finally coming back.
January 2022.
With issue 55?
Yes.
I thought it was like 45 they ended, but I guess it was like...
Listen to this, Nathan. No, it's 54.
Oh, okay.
Listen to this, Nathan. It's coming back in a double-sized issue. And with the same price of $2.99.
It's been $2.99 this whole time?
This is why I fucking love this book.
Yes.
Is because it's like, it's fantastic, you know, right off the bat. And it's priced.
They recognize.
Very well. I would pay more for it, obviously. Like,
yeah.
I'd pay $40.99 for it. But like, yeah, it's just expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they recognize that like, one, it's a great book that people love. But also, they're like, yeah, sorry, we've been gone for a bit, you know,
yeah,
at the same
like,
time.
They owe me this much.
Yeah.
It's
so
been
are you
like,
caught up on Saga?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've read it all. And so like that that kind of makes it more special, I guess, because I'm like, okay, now I get to see, because like they ended on like the biggest fucking cliffhanger, and I'm like, no, because I knew how that they were going to go on a hiatus after this one.
So 54 came out in 2019.
I think it's 2018.
Really?
Yeah.
God, that's been forever then.
Yeah.
What have they even been doing?
Like
Fiona Staples. What has she been doing?
I don't know.
I think she did like a Spider-Man somewhere.
I think they were. She's done like covers, I think. And
some covers
probably
for sure.
Just like a well-deserved break.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they've normally been like pretty solid with like consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like really good. So I just imagine when you're like that good, you just like take longer. You know? And I understand that you do.
Should be able to, yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Brian Caveman was.
Maybe working on Why the Last Man show.
Why the Last Man shit. Or whatever.
He's been doing his own thing, I'm pretty sure, too. But yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That comes out January...
something.
2022, right?
Right, right.
Very exciting.
Other big news. Will Poulter was cast as Adam Warlock in Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yes. Seems like pretty good casting.
They could not have picked a worse person. Are you kidding me?
What are you talking about?
I can't get past the eyebrows.
The eyebrows are good. He's like, a good actor, though.
Adam Warlock is like...
a guy with good eyebrows.
A perfect being or something, right?
Yeah.
And that's not... I do not think of Will Poulter at all.
Will Poulter, to me, is a very versatile-looking actor.
No, he looks like one thing.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't, though. In every single role, I feel like he looks like the big, like, fucking deep eyebrow-looking dude. Or he, like, his body, I feel like, changes sometimes with the role. So I feel like... by the time they actually get to filming like Guardians 3, he's going to look a lot different than what people think of when they think of Will Poulter, which is probably that movie with Jason Sudeikis or whatever.
We're the Millers.
Yeah, We're the Millers. I think people are stuck on that.
Sure.
That picture of Will Poulter, but I think that he's definitely going to like change.
He looks like the kid that used to bite people.
Okay.
Like, that's, like, what I think of.
Yeah, like, sometimes he just looks like a rat for some reason. I don't know
why.
Yeah,
he looks ratty or weaselly.
But I feel like
whatever.
I think it's, because he's a very good actor. It's just, like, hard to get past his face sometimes. But I think that, that it'll be easy to get past his face. Probably because it's also going to be, like, yellow and shit, too. So.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do great with it. Like, James Gunn has not led me astray.
Yeah.
And even though I'm like, huh? Like, I might be, like, it might work out like really well.
Yeah, I think it'll be good.
But first glance, I'm like, I don't like that.
I think so, it's pretty good.
Just because, like, I feel like I could picture like so many other people that would fit it a little bit better.
Sure.
I feel like Adam Warlock would probably be a little bit taller too.
I don't know. I don't really read a whole lot of Adam Warlock, so I was just like, whoever they go with is probably going to be good.
Yeah. Well. Anyway.
Little news.
Little news from here on out.
There was a. announcement for an anthology one-shot book from DC called Are You Afraid of Darkseid? It's going to be 80 pages.
Did that come out?
I don't think it's come out yet, but the only reason I bring it up is because Rob Guillory is going to be on one of the stories, the artist behind Chew, one of my favorite books.
It's dope.
It's going to be Batman and Mad Hatter in The Backseat Killer, and Rob Guillory is going to be doing the art, which is pretty cool.
Sick.
But amongst other people, there's also like Ed Brisson doing a story. Okay. There's going to be Kenny Porter doing a story. He's a writer. Mike Norton is an artist. His most legendary work is Battle Pug, where okay. He's going to be doing one. So
of course.
Some interesting people in there. But, yeah, I always like to see Rob Guillory do Big Two stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's done some Thor, and it's incredible. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, going to see him do Batman, which is going to be cool.
Yeah, I guess Magic Order is coming back, like the sequel. Next month,
mm-hmm.
Which is pretty cool.
Not read much of Magic Order. We should read it, though, and trade it. I'm sure it's a very good book in trade.
Yeah, definitely. We got a first look at Peacemaker. We got a first clip. You don't really see much. He just kind of sits down in a diner.
Oh, yeah, and then the Vigilante thing came out.
Yes,
the last couple weeks as
first
well.
First look at Vigilante.
Looks pretty cool.
Looks dope. Definitely, like, one of the coolest, like, live-action designs, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Just in general, so that was really cool to see.
You know how Jake Gyllenhaal announced a comic book thing like a couple weeks ago
for
Oblivion Song?
Yeah, I do know.
He's also going to star as Sam Hargrave for the film adaptation of Prophet, which is the Rob Liefeld book
okay.
from like way back in the day.
Gotcha.
So I guess, cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if there was a need for, like, Prophet, you know?
Are you familiar with Prophet?
No.
I remember a book that was coming out through Image. It wasn't a lot Rob Liefeld, but it was, like, 2014, 2015 or something. It was coming out. It just had, like, a cool-looking cover.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was kind of more drawn to books that, like, had cool covers and, like, had one-word titles.
Right.
You know? And Prophet, it just, like, looked cool. I never, like, read it or anything, but that's Liefeld, what I thought they were talking about.
Liefeld can make a pretty cool-looking cover. I'll give him
but
that.
But it wasn't Rob Liefeld.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I didn't know what it was. And so I guess this is something else. Because it's, like, Image, I'm like, oh, maybe it was, like, a different one or something.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Good for Jake G.
Yeah, that'll be 3 comic book things that he's done.
Yeah.
Unless he's done another one in the past that I'm not familiar with.
Maybe one of those ones that, like, no one knows is a comic book.
Yeah.
But did you know that that Keanu Reeves book is, like, going to be adapted?
Yeah.
Berserker?
Yeah, I think that was always kind of part of it.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. But it'll be getting a R rating, which would be cool. It's probably
appropriate.
Will suit it, yeah.
Have you read any of it at all?
No. I haven't, but I haven't read
it. It's pretty bloody, so I can see why.
Good, good.
There's going to be a WandaVision spinoff starring Catherine Hahn as Agatha Harkness. It's in development right now at Disney Plus.
Thank goodness, I wanted this so much.
Everybody wanted more Catherine Hahn. I just love Agatha Harkness. And they're like, thank God Agatha Harkness is in the MCU now.
I mean, like, what she did as a villain throughout that show was, like, cool, but I still don't think she's, like, that crazy of, like, a villain.
I think that villain written for, like, that show was done in an interesting way.
Yeah.
I just don't know how they would continue to have her be interesting if it's just, like, origin or spinoff or
future
stuff.
We
kind of
got origin, and I don't know where she, like, goes from here.
Yeah.
Did she, like, blast her or something into, like...
She's, like, stuck in some...
She's in, like, a witch jail or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I read a couple comments that I kind of agree with, but it's basically just, like, live-action Marvel is gonna learn, like, some of the same painful lessons that comic books kind of learn, where they spin off a series... And it just, like, it just comes into, like, a big old continuity that people won't be able to, like, keep up with. And some of the spinoff things won't have the same legs as some of the others.
I think they kind of write them all in, like, continuity. But I think you'd be able to go from, like, Endgame to, like, you know, any other movie and still, like, kind of pick up, you know, where they left off.
Yeah.
It's not like... Shang-Chi was, like, affected by WandaVision or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, like, with these spinoff series, they won't be that detrimental. Maybe Loki, but just because I think that was just something to explain what the multiverse is and that it exists now.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily need that to understand, you know, what will happen in Spider-Man or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. What else we got?
Did you know that there's going to be, like, I don't know who's making it. It's like some YouTube channel, I think, is making a live action adaptation of the Wayne Family Adventures.
Live action adaptation of Wayne Family Adventures.
Yeah, that like...
The web comic? The webtoons?
Webtoons one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like it was like not anything like official, but like...
That's kind
of
cool.
Some
though.
Sort of like small studios is just like doing it.
Interesting.
Yeah. You saw some pictures of it. Seemed cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that'd be that hard to make. It was mainly just kind of like, mostly like dialogue. It's not like anything like crazy happened.
Not like fighting or anything?
Not much.
Okay.
To be honest. It's just kind of people just interacting with each other.
Right.
Spider-Man and Iron Man are going to appear in a Marvel, I think it's going to be a manga. I forgot the word for it for a second. But they are going to travel to Japan to battle an evil gaming magnate and his deadly new technology in a book called Secret Reverse. And it's going to be from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Creator, Kazuki Takahashi, which releases in summer.
Oh, 2022. Cool. That sounds sick.
Yeah. And a pretty cool cover so far. I mean, it's just Spider-Man and Iron Man. But
yeah, it doesn't look too manga really, but no, it's cool that they're kind of getting in that space.
Yeah, it might be kind of more like the High Republic Edge of Balance book that we did, where it's like manga, but it's like American manga. Might be something like that.
Yeah, hopefully if like that dude's attached to it, it'll have like a manga artist attached to it, which I think is most important.
I'd hope so. Well, it's going to be a story and art by him.
Oh, he does the art too. That's awesome.
So I guess it would be a manga.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So that's cool that they got the Yu-Gi-Oh creator to do something for Marvel. Good for them.
We're getting a new Young Justice series called Phantoms.
I think that's just the next season.
Okay.
I remember seeing that.
You know, I don't know enough about it to say you're wrong. So I think that's more focusing on like the main crew or whatever. So that'll be fun.
I follow Comicron, which is a Twitter account / business that does a lot of comic book sales metrics and statistics. And the summer of 2021 found comic book sales at one of their highest points in the last 25 years. And the top 300 comics sold at least 24.2 million copies in the June through August quarter, which is more than any summer quarter except for 2016's Rebirth. So pretty cool. Comics aren't dying.
Rebirth was that much?
Rebirth was pretty big, apparently.
Wow.
And it was in 2016, though. So far.
Damn, dude. I'd only been reading for like a year, and they're like, boom, bunch of shit. And I'm like, okay.
And you're like, yeah, I'm picking it up.
Like, I guess.
Yeah. So that's cool. Comics aren't dying like people say they are.
Yeah, that's nice. That's always cool to hear. That's a lot of fucking books.
That's a lot. Yeah.
That's a lot of paper, you know?
And it's none of it's manga.
Like, oh, wow.
Like people are.
I thought it was like partially manga.
No, none manga.
Wow.
So comic book periodicals only. And that also, it does include, it's from like Diamond, but it also includes DC sales. So it's like everything. So it's cool. There was a new Silver Surfer series, limited series that was announced called Silver Surfer Rebirth. And the general gist is that somebody takes the Reality Stone and brings back Captain Mar-Vell, like back from the dead.
Okay.
Like the boy one.
Right.
And Silver Surfer has to take it and then take it away. But then that means Captain Mar-Vell dies, I think. But it's from Ron Lim and Ron Mars, if you know who they are. But they're pretty good artists.
Okay. Cool.
And then probably the other big thing is that on National Coming Out Day, Superman, in the series Superman, Son of Kal-El, so
number
John
five.
Kent.
Right.
John Kent, Superman, he came out as bisexual,
mm-hmm.
Which was pretty cool. And I saw it and I was like, pretty cool. And
yeah,
then,
good stuff.
And then everything exploded on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm like, let's get another one.
Yeah. Where they're just like, a bunch of people being like, what the fuck? And a bunch of people complaining about the people saying, what the fuck? And then, like, an Arizona state senator was like, Superman loves Lois Lane. She, like, spelled Lois Lane's name wrong and then was, like, made it a whole political thing. And then the comic book writer of that book, Tom Taylor, went on to CNN to talk about it.
Wow.
And he talked with John Berman, who's the CNN guy, I guess, but he was talking about John Kent coming out as bisexual, and he's very well-spoken and was... He's just a cool guy in general.
Yeah, so he killed it. And
he killed it, and he takes it very
That's like the not well. The only aspect of that book.
It's
like,
not.
This is like, it's not like the first issue. It's like the fifth issue.
That's not like the concept of the book either.
Yeah, the
it's
story
just like,
has started.
He just like...
And this is just like a little nugget.
Yeah, it is. And I'm sure that the book itself is incredible. People focus on this one thing and politicize and make it very weird.
Right.
And then they think that it's like actually Superman... Who's like,
right.
So it's very clear when things like this happen, when people complain about it, it's very clear that they don't read the book because then
no
like.
No one that's mad about this reads comics.
Exactly. Like who is that dude that's shitty now who played Superman? Dean Cain?
Oh yeah.
He was like, he came out and was like, this is bad.
He did that. He came out when that Captain America stuff was going on.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm like,
why are you?
Shut up.
Yeah. He just
Dean Cain.
The only time I hear about Dean Cain now is when he's mad about comic books that he hasn't read.
Right.
It's like insane. So
he probably didn't even read any when he was Superman.
Yeah, no.
You know?
Definitely not.
Like,
he's just so full of himself, you know?
Right.
And a lot of the people that were complaining about it are, because it's not a big deal. And it's not Superman like Clark Kent Superman.
He is Superman, but he's not Clark
Kent.
He
is Superman. He's just a Superman. Just
right.
Like how Miles Morales is a Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah, and it's so, like, I'd rather have more of this, like, more diversity, have, like, different storylines branch out from these sort of things, than have, like, another straight white male, like, superhero.
Yeah.
That, like, looks cool or whatever.
That's boring.
Super boring. Super outdated. John Kent, I think he was only created in, like, 2015.
He's pretty new, yeah.
So it's like, they can do whatever they want with this
guy.
It's
a new character that, like, people can now identify themselves in, you know?
Exactly.
So, pretty cool.
Yeah, because, like, yeah,
Yeah,
I like this thing.
I like it too. I think it's a good addition. Something was in my head and it was a good point. I forgot. Oh, I saw another tweet that was pretty funny where it's just like a quote of just like a random person that's against this. And the quote was just like, why are people pushing sexuality in comics or whatever? And then all the pictures, there's like a bunch of pictures from like Tom King's Batman run where he's just like making out with Catwoman.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the same thing. Like,
there's so much sex in Batman.
So much. And it's like, this is literally the same thing, except not as extreme as like the Tom King Batman run, because like, they're literally making out. They had sex on a rooftop. You remember rooftops?
Yeah.
It was great. But like, it's the same thing, you know, someone pushing their sexuality in comics or whatever.
Sex is like 33% of the reason why I read comics.
Yeah, exactly.
To see some titties.
And I'm not complaining about who's making out with who.
Have you read Saga? Oh my God.
So much romance.
A lot of romance.
In the first issue even.
A lot of love.
In the first issue even.
I don't remember the first issue specifically.
I think they were banging.
Oh yeah, because she was a guard and he was like a prisoner.
Or no. Prisoner the first issue I think was birth, not sex.
That's good too.
Yeah, that's that's in there as well.
But that comes from love.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. It's
good job, Tom Taylor.
Good job, Tom Taylor. Love that guy.
That dude.
He always kills it.
That dude has slowly over like the course, not slowly. I guess yeah, slowly over the course of like the past 5-10 years, he's just taken over comics. I swear to God.
Yeah. He's like,
ever since like he's done Injustice, he's just done all these different things, and it's just like so much.
I feel like he's like DC's like Donny Cates. Because I feel like...
But he's at Marvel, too. He's doing Dark Ages right now at Marvel.
Oh, is he? Oh, cool.
Tom Taylor, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like Donny Cates is doing, like, the same thing, but, like, at a faster pace at Marvel, you know? But, yeah. Love them all.
Yep.
Big fan.
And I think that's all the news I had.
Nathan.
Yes.
The singer of Smash Mouth is leaving.
I can see why. Did you see that? Yeah. We all saw it.
Yeah, it was because of that.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
That makes sense.
Because I think that video came out, like, yesterday. Or something.
A couple days ago, I think.
But
he's just hammered to shit, like kind of doing a concert.
And, like not doing very well.
He's just there at the concert.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to kill your whole family.
Yeah.
And then I like when he's like leaned up against the wall and he's just like trying to hold his beer and then he just like drops it because he's like falling asleep on the wall. It's bad.
Dude, I was watching Supernatural this morning because we're still kind of jet lagged and we wake up at like 4 a.m. So we watched Supernatural. Naturally, and there's this like hacker person,
sure,
and she's like trying to like upload this thing, right? And her profile picture is Lion Cat.
No way.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, rewind that.
Enhance.
I'm like, that's Lion Cat. And then Sarah's like, yeah, it's Lion Cat. I'm like, no, lying cat. She's like, hey. And so I was just like, damn, that's a deep ass cut.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm like, I wonder how many viewers, because this is like I think this season came out in like 2015. Okay. So maybe like the book was like a little bit newer around then.
Yeah,
so
I don't
just
know
like
when
how,
it came
just
out.
How deep of the cut it was, I was just like, wow, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love when comic things are in TV.
I know, it's awesome. There's a Beatles docuseries coming to Disney Plus. It's called Beatles Get Back, gonna be directed by Peter Jackson.
Saga first came out in 2012. So,
okay,
yeah.
So maybe a couple years.
It was
the
like
belt.
In the 30s.
Yeah, well, ish. Assuming that they were can.
No, probably not. Probably like in its 20s. Because if it just went on hiatus on 54 in 2019, it was probably. Yeah, so right. Fairly new.
Yeah, they had like a couple hiatuses there, but it wasn't like nearly that long.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, anyway, Beatles. I guess they were filming like a movie in like the 70s that was supposed to come out, but like it never did. And so I guess like the film was like. Never released because, like, I guess whoever made the film owned the rights to it. But now, 50 years later, it's like out there and being made into like a docuseries. And so it's them like writing an album in like a week.
Huh.
And so there's like 60 hours of footage.
They should keep the original film and then do reshoots and then edit it all in together, just not explain when there's like a 50-year gap.
like
scene to scene, they just like age 50 years and then reverse age 50 years. And it's just like, don't even mention it.
Yeah, Paul McCartney is just like insanely old. And it's like, what happened? But no, I just thought that was exciting. And there are Beatles comics. So that's kind of Beatles news.
I guess so.
They're kind of comics news.
Yeah.
But anyway, we could read a Beatles comic, Nathan. Wouldn't that be sick?
Isn't the fifth Beatle
a pretty comic? Good one, yeah. Okay. I read that. Pretty well regarded. I think it's...
Is that the only Beatles comic?
No, there's multiple. There's one called Paul is Dead through Image. That came out last year, I think. There's one called John Lennon, The New York Years. That one's pretty good, too.
You know a lot about Beatles comics.
Yeah, I've read like all of them, I think.
Really?
I
actually listen to the Beatles?
Yeah, I love the Beatles. Okay. I don't like have them on playlists or anything.
Do you have one vinyl of the Beatles?
Maybe. I don't think so.
Name every Beatles song right now. You're not a real fan.
I know. Did you ever see that movie Yesterday?
No. I've heard it's good, though.
It's a great movie. I guess, like, for me, just because, like, I know a lot of the songs, I'm like, wow. Because, like, I've had that idea in my head. I'm like, what if I went back in time?
I think everybody has.
And I was, like, the Foo Fighters. Yeah. You know? I just have to remember all the Foo Fighters songs.
Most of that idea has been fleshed out is in Hot Tub Time Machine when he goes back and he just becomes... and he becomes Motley Crue.
Yeah, no, he's Motley Lou.
So and I'm like, damn it, that idea's been done already.
What if I hope like that director didn't see that in Hot Tub Time Machine. He's like, even better.
Let's do it for the Beatles.
The Beatles, yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's a good movie. I think I saw it with Grammy.
Yeah.
Naturally. But anyway.
Shall we get into the book?
Yes, Nathan. What spooky book did we read on this spooky episode?
This spooky episode, we read Batman Arkham Asylum. And it's a...
I should get the book out.
It's like a graphic novel by Grant Morrison and illustrated by Dave McKean. There's like a subtitle called A Serious House on a Serious Earth. And it is fucking crazy. I've read this before, which is why I knew that we should read it eventually. And a spooky week is a good week to read it.
Indeed.
But what were your thoughts on it?
I have a lot of thoughts. This is quite the experience.
Yes.
For sure.
It's fucking unlike anything else. Ever.
The artwork was absolutely bonkers and
like unfathomable.
Insane. Unfathomable. I could not absorb it and understand it, you know?
Yeah. Like as deep and abstract as Grant Morrison's writing is, it's like the same level of abstract and insane and like just mind boggling, like how whatever he did got on the page, like it totally matches Grant Morrison's abstraction. Like,
yeah.
Just fundamentally crazy. Like I like this is one of those books where if people are like comic books aren't art, like you give them this,
I would smack them with this.
You give them Kingdom
and then,
Come,
and then
you know?
I would open it for them.
Yeah, like this is one of those books where I'd be like, "See, look at this," and I like open a page, and it's like, "Cause
you
Dave,
make that."
Dave McKean is like just on another level. Like I don't know what he does.
Have
if
you,
it's like multimedia, like taking pictures, and
I will never, I would never know his process.
Have, no
have you seen him in anything else?
He did a cover for Lucifer.
Okay, that sounds right.
He did one of those variant covers that I was talking to you that we were talking about. And then he's done some stuff with Neil Gaiman.
Sounds right.
And
sounds like something he'd do.
Yeah, there was like in the back matter, there's like a artist bio thing and it shows some of the other things that he's done. But it was mostly like Neil Gaiman. He's like an English artist.
Nice.
So most of his stuff doesn't make it to America that much, I don't think.
Okay.
But yeah, he's crazy and this book is dope.
A couple other thoughts. This is kind of like Batman's like greatest hits of like his villains, because like a lot of them are in this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And it's cool to see like what was his name, David McKean.
Yeah,
it's cool to see like his version of all these characters rather than like just the Joker, you
for
know
sure
what I mean?
Yeah,
the Joker in this is absolutely terrifying. I was petrified
like
every time.
Actually terrifying. Like you
absolutely
look at him, you're like,
terrifying.
This is it. The pages with Joker on him, I'm just uncomfortable.
I had to look away. Yeah. I was like, that's why it took me so long to read. I'm
this
like,
book
I, can't,
had,
I can't even read it.
This book had jump scares in it.
I had to cover the panel so I could read the caption.
You turn the page and it's, Joker. It was a jump scare.
There he is again.
It's like fucking unreal. In the back matter, like it shows like part of his process of making the Joker, but he sculpted like a clay mask.
That's cool.
To use as reference. And it's fucking horrifying.
Absolutely.
So yeah, very, very good Joker. And just very good like personality of the Joker as well. Like every aspect of like art on the page feels like it just fits Joker. Like even the lettering like of Joker's dialogue, it's not in a caption box. It's just like out there and like unstructured, and it's in red and scratchy, and there's blood splatter to like emphasize like sort of the like how Joker speaks and stuff like that. So
yeah, the lettering definitely fit, but it was like kind of difficult to read
Which, got a little bit blurry at some points, at least in the Comixology.
Yeah, thing. And so that was like a little like annoying.
Yeah.
But the thing with this was I really was wishing it was like longer because it's only about like 100 pages.
Yeah.
It's like one graphic novel doesn't come in like issues. The art is obviously like a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like the art that makes this like what it is.
For sure.
Because I think like the writing is maybe like a 6 or a 7 in my head.
Okay.
There are some great concepts in here. Like the shit with Toothface, I love.
Yeah. There's a really good Toothface arc.
But like the rest of it, I'm like, okay. You know, like he definitely needed David McKean for this to be what it is.
Yeah.
And for it have that big of an impact that it has on comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I was just kind of expecting a bit more.
Yeah. I Grant Morrison, just for me, is kind of hit or miss because I'm not that smart. Yeah. And he writes with a lot of symbolism and religious sort of like religious symbolism and stuff like that as well, which I don't understand a whole lot of the time. But I feel like with Grant Morrison, like every couple of projects from him, he does something like this where it's like crazy and abstract in ways that I can't understand.
Mm.
And then he'll do like what he's doing right now, like Superman and the Authority, where it's just like Superman being Superman, or like he'll do like a new X-Men where it's not crazy like this and like psychedelic and stuff like that. So Grant Morrison in general, it's hard for me to understand sometimes, but I think what's nice about this, like the version of Batman Arkham Asylum that you get on Comixology or that's available in print now, every single page of script is in the back matter.
Yeah, this might be like our biggest back matter ever.
Yeah, it
has to like be. 111 pages of back matter, I think.
And the full script was in there, and then like a bunch of the Dave McKean layouts are in there. It's really, really awesome back matter, but it helped me understand what was going on, because if I didn't know what the fuck I just read, I would go find that page. And I did that for this so that I could like articulate what's going on.
Okay.
But yeah, I think after doing that, I appreciate what's going on a lot more. But at the same time, Grant Morrison goes way crazy with the scripts. He'll like set up a scene and he types like 3 paragraphs. And I'm like, dang, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, that can be helpful, I guess, if you're like an artist. You just want to know what
just
they
context,
want.
Context, I guess.
Yeah, context.
Yeah. So pretty crazy book.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit difficult to review because it is so heavy on the art and like dependent on that, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll do our best.
But I think that there are some interesting concepts that are cool in here. And I think the game is based off of this.
Because
the general idea is that Batman has to go into Arkham Asylum to do some heroing. And that's kind of like the first game. It's like Batman has to go into Arkham Asylum to do some heroing.
Yeah.
But in that, there's some question, there's some like self-reflection and questions of like Batman's rationality of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool stuff. But anyway, we'll just get into it. Actually, even before we get into it, there's kind of like a crazy quote at the beginning that's like Alice in Wonderland. And I'm like, all right, we're already getting into some crazy like
trippy some, shit.
Yeah. And just like the first pages of design, like before we even get into like the comic, it shows like kind of what Dave McKean's art is like about, or like his design process. So it really prepares you for the kind of work that you're going to see. But essentially the book kind of goes into the origins right off the bat of Arkham Asylum, which I think is really cool because it's like Arkham Asylum is like such a big part of Batman, but I never thought about the origins of it.
Right.
So this book kind of covers that, which is cool. And it's kind of like a dark story as well. But we see Amadeus Arkham, who's this young boy, and he's witnessing his own mother's descent into madness. And we see like a lot of imagery of his mom with like beetles coming out of her mouth and stuff, which is kind of gross.
I thought they're roaches.
I think he says that they're like beetles.
Oh, okay.
He thinks that maybe madness is like a method of being reborn in a way. And so there's like a lot of those ideas in there. And then it jumps to like the present, and Commissioner Gordon informs Batman that a riot has happened at Arkham Asylum, and it caused the patients in Arkham Asylum to take over the building, and they plan on murdering the staff unless Batman agrees to surrender himself to Arkham and talk with them, basically. And the Joker over the phone even kills somebody to like incentivize him even more.
A couple things.
Yeah, a couple things.
There's like photography in this.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was super interesting because it like also fits with the artwork.
I also don't know how he did that because the book that we're reading has been published for a while, and it's the 25th anniversary of that book.
Yeah, man.
So, like, it's not like
computers even a thing back then.
I don't know. Like, is Photoshop even a thing back then? Like, I don't know how this dude did this. And it, even if it was like now, I wouldn't know how he did this.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty hard.
So it's really cool. There's like pictures of like old buildings and like when there's drawings like overlaid on it, it's like really just insane. Like, I don't know. It really like blurs the line of just like what's pencil and what's photo and what's, I don't know, After Effects sort of things. So it's really, really cool.
Go ahead.
And like a lot of these layouts for like the panels and stuff, none of it's traditional.
Oh yeah. This like, is all like,
it's not like new squares, you know, there's like really long rectangular panels in the first one. And then they just like, they lead your eye like diagonally across the page in some instances. And it's really cool.
When we were first introduced to Batman, it's like the bat signal in the sky.
Air. Yep.
And, he goes up to Jim Gordon and he's like, "What's up?"
Does he say that?
Yeah. And I'm like, would Batman say what's up?
He does say what's up.
And that just like caught me by surprise.
The first dialogue from Batman is, "Sorry I'm late, Commissioner. Problems out of town. What's up?"
Yeah, it's like,
I think it's like, what's going on? Kind of what's up. It's not like a, oh, what's up, man? Like,
yeah.
How's the family?
Yeah, like maybe.
I really like how Batman appears as silhouette when he's like first on the page, whereas Commissioner
he's
Gordon,
like all silhouette in most of this.
He pretty much is, but like Gordon is like fully penciled, and this is also like, I feel like one of the only instances where long bat ears look dope as fuck.
Yeah, it definitely works really well.
This is the only like one of the only times where long bat ears really fits the story, because it's just insane. Like, why would you have long bat ears? But
and I fucking love like the pencil panels. They look so sick.
Yeah, it's really cool. It really just like creates the mood, I feel like, a lot better, because it's not like super colored either. It's mainly like gray tones, if anything. But yeah, he does a really great job there. And then, of course, incredible lettering with the Joker, like the red hand-drawn text. I think it's hand-drawn. I don't even know like how lettering worked back at this time. I assume it's Dave McKean doing it.
He's a feather and ink.
I guess so. Like, but it changes with like emphasis in Joker's voice, and there's like random instances of like blood splatter in like the lettering. So it does really well, just kind of showing how insane Joker is.
Another thing with the dialogue is like when Joker's talking like on the phone, talking mm-hmm. about like the girl he's about to kill or whatever, Batman screams like, "Jesus, no." I'm like, would Batman say Jesus?
I don't know, man. Like, he doesn't want this girl to die.
Yeah, it's just like it's just like dialogue that I've never heard from like Batman. I feel like I read a lot of Batman, and so it's just like, this is definitely like,
I feel like
it sounds like it's more like Grant Morrison like dialogue. Like, it's like him speaking through Batman, not really what, I don't think he's necessarily thinking about what Batman would say, kind of thing. Or what I've heard him say.
Maybe. I think that Grant Morrison is just really good at drawing a Batman, or like creating a Batman that is fragile and like insane.
Yeah.
Which is very apparent in this book, but also in like his JLA run, Batman's like just fucking weird, you know?
Okay.
So this is like pretty run of the mill Batman for me, for at least for what I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Jesus, no. Like, I can't like see that being like portrayed in live action,
right?
But like, I'm reading a comic, so I was like, okay, this is what he's saying, let's keep
going. He says Jesus a couple more times, but
does he?
Yeah, it was just something that like really stuck out for me.
That's funny. So Batman decides to go in, but admits to Gordon that he questions the rationality of his own behavior as Batman, and if Batman himself belongs in Arkham. So a couple questions posed there. And then back with sort of Amadeus Arkham, he grows up to become a psychiatrist, where he works with one of his first patients, the Mad Dog, who's like a normal villain. He's in that Arrow show, Mad Dog.
Oh.
So that's him, but it's like obviously a different...
Different time,
different
whatever.
Time, yeah. So through his work with Mad Dog, he's inspired to turn his family home in Gotham City into a psychiatric facility to treat the mentally ill. And I think it's really interesting to see the origin of Arkham in this way. Like especially with how it starts with like the best of intentions, and then later we see it kind of descend into a much darker thing. But like, Amadeus Arkham is just doing what he thinks is like good for these people that are mentally ill, and he kind of like has empathy for him because his like mom went kind of insane. So I just think that that's a cool perspective.
Yeah.
But Batman goes into Arkham to talk with Joker, and Joker releases the hostages, but there are still some more people in there. And they are the psychoanalysts Dr. Ruth Adam and Dr. Cavendish, which I've never heard that name before. But they've elected to stay to try and help sort of the patients in Arkham Asylum, but also to study them. So pretty cool. I love this establishing shot of Batman walking up to the Arkham doors.
Mm.
It's just like super green, sort of like on the outside, but I'm looking at the wrong one. They had that same one, but
without the green, and it's just like dark and gloomy.
The green was Amadeus walking up to his home, but when Batman walks in, the tree's dead, which is cool imagery.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. This is our first time we see the Joker, and you can't tell me that this isn't the most insane thing you've ever seen in your entire life.
It's awful.
He doesn't have like eyelids. I don't know where they went, but they're not on his face. And he just
creepiest
has like
smile.
The most insanely long chin.
Yeah.
And like big mouth and just so disturbing. I don't know. Like there's not a good way to like explain it.
He's got like this big nose and like his face is like much longer. And he doesn't have like the color part of your eye. I don't know what that's called. It's just like the pupil.
Yeah.
And it's awful. And his eyes, around his eyes, it's all like red, but it's almost like flesh colored, like it's like scars or like they're bloodshot or something like that.
Mm-hmm. When he's first talking to Batman, he like grabs his ass at some point.
Does he?
It's like something I didn't expect.
I want to see some ass grabbing.
Yeah, it's this panel right here. He says, "Loosen up, tight ass," and then he grabs his ass right here.
Oh. I did not
and then Batman
that.
Doesn't like that. He doesn't like to be groped very well, but it is cool to see like
take your filthy hands off me.
Yeah, he says that, and then he's like showing his teeth in like anger as well. But we only like see his teeth; we don't see his face, so it's like very primal almost.
I like the twisty shoulder pads that he's got.
Yeah,
it's very Tim Burton.
Yeah, it is. And then there's like a double page spread where they like first walk into like the main room of Arkham, and there's like a lot going on with that double page spread. And I don't really know what to look at or like how they piece together, but it's pretty much just like a bunch of madness. It's like this one where they first walk in and there's like a whole lot going on.
I either want like a print of this Joker or like a statue or something.
I'm sure.
Because like, I just want to see it more often.
Yeah.
To somehow like digest it. But
it's really cool.
It's great. Like that sculpture that's in the back matter. Love to have one of those.
Yeah. That would be cool. We're introduced to Two-Face, who has become like even more kind of insane or like incapable with Dr. Ruth's therapy. So Dr. Ruth attempted to replace his typical two-sided coin with a six-sided die so that he could make more decisions instead of like him being dependent on his obsession with duality with like the two-sided coin. So they gave him a six-sided die, and now he's up to a whole deck of tarot cards to cure his sort of indecision, or his obsession with duality. But now, because there are so many decisions, Two-Face is incapable of making any decision, no matter how simple it is. And he actually like takes a shit on the floor, which I think is a weird way to represent that he can't make decisions, but I guess it's effective.
Yeah, I guess this one's a very like most outrageous kind of, not like outrageous, but like most outlandish like examples of certain things like that. And then just kind of like other things of that nature, just because like of how I guess he writes, you know, he just like the points that he gets across, they're definitely like odd, but they seem to work.
Yeah. Like I think that idea of if Two-Face is presented with more options than just two, he like goes backwards, you know, like he can't like make any decision at all. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's like a very interesting concept that they explore here. And Dr. Ruth thinks that he's like making progress because he's making more decisions than two, but now that he's incapable of doing anything, it's like, is it really helping him kind of deal?
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Ruth Adams also talks about Joker's insanity and how it's fascinating because he's basically like a whole different breed of insanity. She calls it super sanity. But they basically just like don't know what to do with him. So Joker is like, they're all talking in like this room in Arkham, and Joker holds up a Rorschach to Batman where he sees like a scary bat, but he denies seeing anything. And then he convinces Ruth Adams to do a psychoanalysis of Batman with a word association game, which clearly bothers Batman by the end of it, because he's talking, begins to like remember his family dying and stuff like that, but it very much amuses the Joker. And then Joker essentially forces Batman into a game of hide and seek where Batman's villains are going to be sent after Batman to hunt him down in Arkham Asylum. So Batman begins running while sort of also fighting his old memories of when his parents died. And at one point he punches a mirror as if, because he like sees the memory in that mirror, and punching it like would have stopped it. And he cuts himself with like a shard of glass to like deal with the tragedy. So a lot of things that are happening here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is interesting when Joker holds up the Rorschach to Batman and he clearly sees a bat, but on the outside he kind of like denies seeing anything because he's trying to like keep his composure.
Yeah.
What
did you see in this Rorschach, Nathan?
Let me take a look at it. A pretty butterfly.
See, two fairies kissing.
I was about to say it almost looks like two roosters or something. Two chickens, maybe.
Yeah, kissing. Maybe. Yeah, if they're like flapping their wings.
Yeah,
it looks like Pollo.
Yeah,
like because like Demon they there's like a little red foot at the bottom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's what gives me chicken vibes.
Yeah, they all kind of look like butterflies, you know. But if you really look,
I really like this moment where Joker gets all like intense and amused by what he's seeing. And it's, like, represented by, like, this crazy high-contrast, like, motion blur sort of deal.
Yeah.
And then there's a point in here where Joker tells a joke and then he kills somebody. But, like, the joke is just, like, he's telling the story of a man and, like, at the end his wife and unborn child dies. And, like, that was, like, the punchline. So that's, like, the Joker's joke. And I'm like, okay. So it's not, like, the kind of Joker that we're sort of familiar with where he, like, actually kind of makes jokes. Like, he's kind of, like, quippy. He's just, like, insane with, like, the jokes that he makes.
Yeah, he'll, like, his only his sense of humor is that he makes jokes.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, like, they're good ones.
But his sense of humor is, like, very dark.
Yeah.
And obviously not very funny jokes.
Mm.
Yeah. I thought it was cool imagery when Batman was, like, cutting himself with a shard of glass. There's, like, a drop of blood that's, like, dropping towards the ground. And it, like, goes in, like, slow motion almost. But it, like, does a close-up when it hits the ground. And there's, like, really convincing-looking, like, blood drop. Or blood splatter, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Like this part right here.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, super cool. And then in the B plot, I guess, with Amadeus Arkham, the asylum is underway. It's being built into the asylum, but he gets a call from the police saying that the Mad Dog has escaped. And later it's hinted that the Mad Dog murders the wife of Amadeus at this time. And he basically cuts her to pieces and places her head in like a toy house, which causes Amadeus to like himself descend into a little bit of insanity out of grief.
Mm-hmm.
So that sucks. Someone that he was working with ends up killing his wife. That's not very good.
Stop you working.
Yeah. So the villains get bored of waiting to chase Batman. So they just start chasing Batman anyway. So now we get into like the part of this where Batman is actually dealing with like a lot of these villains.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like traditional Batman punching people because it's like more psychological most of the time.
Right.
So the first one that Batman runs into is Clayface, who in this one is just like an incredibly rotten looking in like his flesh. And he's like miserably sick trying to like share his disease with Batman. So Batman just like has to avoid this guy. I didn't even recognize him as Clayface at first. I just thought he was a very sick man, but he looks awful.
It's definitely context driven.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like this version of Clayface is just very Grant Morrison to me because he's trying to like think about Clayface and like what Clayface is and then just like let's put that in a person and how awful that would be, you know. So yeah, that's a very interesting take on Clayface. But then after that we see this guy named Dr. Destiny. I have no idea who this guy is, but he's basically like a guy in a wheelchair and Batman pushes him off his wheelchair down some stairs, which is funny and weird. I don't know what that scene's about.
Yeah.
But I only know his name's Dr. Destiny because I went and looked at, like, the script pages.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a scene where Batman's, like, hiding in, like, some room and he sees Scarecrow walk by. So he's able to, like, avoid him. But then he runs into Mad Hatter, who's not that interested in, like, killing Batman. But he kind of gives him, like, some... he talks a lot about, like, sort of Alice in Wonderland a little bit. And he like, himself looks kind of gross and perverted looking.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, basically what we get out of there is that there's some Alice in Wonderland references made here that essentially foreshadows what's going on in the end.
But well, yeah. Isn't the Mad Hatter, like, in Alice in Wonderland? But, like, not this one, obviously.
Yeah, so it makes sense that... So I guess, like, in this version, Mad Hatter bases his identity off of the Alice in Wonderland one?
Okay.
It seems like that would be the reason why.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about Alice and he's holding up a doll of like a little girl. So yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. And then in the past plot, Amadeus Arkham, despite his wife being murdered by Mad Dog, Amadeus treats Mad Dog as his psychiatrist for a few months until Amadeus eventually plans an accident with an electric chair killing Mad Dog.
Oops.
I don't know how that would be like an accident or how you could pass that off as an accident.
It's like, oh my God, he accidentally fell into this.
Oh my God, he accidentally strapped himself into the electric chair.
And turned it on.
Oh God, I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how he writes it. And then later, he turns to drugs and like psychedelic drugs and descends like further into madness. So, but I do kind of like the revenge arc that Amadeus Arkham gets on Mad Dog.
Yeah.
I was like, that's at least there's some closure there, I guess. So Batman's continuing through Arkham and he witnesses this dude named Maxi Zeus, who's wired himself up with like a bunch of wire, I guess, to like this battery. And he's like addicted to like electricity, I guess. And he believes himself to be the god Zeus. And he like offers power to Batman. But Batman's like, nah, I'm just going to dip. And he just like leaves him. So like, I've got no idea who this dude is hooked up to like electricity or like what the point of this was. I even like looked it up. But it's just like hard for me to articulate like what's going on here.
Right.
And why. But really cool looking. It's like this is one of the instances where like Dave McKean's art makes me go like this looks insane and like it's very interesting. I just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So then we get into like some actual action with Killer Croc. So he finds Killer Croc, who by the way looks awesome. He actually like looks like a crocodile in like a way.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like these big red eyes and stuff. But he gets into a fight with Killer Croc and Batman is like beaten and he's thrown through like a super high window. And Batman, like, barely grabs onto a ledge, and he climbs up, and he notices a statue holding a spear. And that statue is supposed to be symbolic of, like, religion or something. But Batman takes the spear, and he goes back to ambush Croc, and he stabs him with it. But while Killer Croc is stabbed with the spear, he takes the other end of the spear to impale it through Batman. So now they're both sort of kebabbed on this, like, spear together. And then Batman eventually breaks the spear in between them and then kicks Killer Croc through the window too. So finally we get some action, which is like, at this point I was like, there's not a whole lot of like superheroing, you know?
Yeah.
Which I get that like, that's not like the point of this book, but it was cool to see like the way that Dave McKean portrays action and like punching and stuff like that.
I think the statue is probably St. Michael.
It is St. Michael.
The Archangel?
Yeah.
He's a protector.
Oh. Okay, nice.
Yeah, he's like, what do they call it? Yeah, like the saint of like protection or something like that.
Okay. So. Yeah. I did read that it was like Saint Michael. Mm. So good job.
Yeah.
I just didn't know who that was. So that creates a lot more context.
There's a whole prayer that we do that I memorized from church is like Saint Michael the Archangel, protect us in battle.
Mm.
Protect us from the wicked snares of the devil, stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So it's like he's like there's like angels and there's like archangels, you know, kind of like also X-Men. Like,
oh yeah, okay, thank you for putting it in perspective. Yeah. I understand.
I'm trying to help. And then like right above that is like God, basically.
Okay, so yeah, the archangel was protecting Batman in this instance by giving him a spear.
Yeah, man.
Sure. I don't know.
I think I saw it as like he's kind of has to be like a protector of like this place.
Okay.
And kind of protect it from the inmates in it. And so, and I guess like
the spear helped him in doing that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Sure. And I guess the Joker could be portrayed as the devil in this specific story.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's got the look.
Right.
I think it's kind of ironic that Batman stabs Killer Croc and then it just like Killer Croc does the know you sort of move and then he like stabs himself. And so they're like both kebabbed on the spear. Like, I just think that situation is kind of funny.
I would never, if I ever got stabbed, I would never think like, oh no, push it against someone else.
I'll just stab you with this in me.
Because that would hurt you too.
Yeah,
you
know? It would. It wouldn't be easy to do that, you know?
Yeah. But he gets whooped in this, if it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He's pretty beat up. So Batman, after all that happens with the Killer Croc, he goes into another room and he finds the other doctor, Dr. Cavendish, from the beginning of the book, holding a straight razor to Dr. Ruth's neck. And he is revealed to be the one that orchestrated the whole riot at Arkham. and he wants Batman to read a passage from Amadeus Arkham's secret diary. And so the room that they're in turns out to be Amadeus's mom's bedroom, where she had delusions, like sort of haunting her, back when Amadeus was taking care of her. And Amadeus eventually sees the same monster that was tormenting his mom, which is a big bat that was like symbolic of death, like resembling death. And Amadeus wanted to free his mother from suffering, so Amadeus slits her throat. And then he later, down in life, represses the memory as a suicide. And so Dr. Cavendish blames Batman for, because like the bat thing, he blames Batman for creating the mad souls that are now within Arkham because of this bat symbolism. So one, it's crazy that Amadeus kills his own mom after all that. Like, I feel like that's a lot of like a lot of buildup to just for like this big moment. And it's portrayed very well because it's like very red. And like, you don't actually see his mom's like throat being slit. You just see like the blood splatter from it, but it's like very violent, I feel like. And so Amadeus himself was admitted into Arkham Asylum, where he like uses his fingernails to scratch spells into the walls in an attempt to like trap the evil spirit of the bat, which he believes is in the Arkham house. And so he basically scratches on these walls until the day he dies. But Dr. Cavendish then discovers Amadeus's secret journal and wants to continue Arkham's work. And so that's why he plans to lure Batman, aka the bat that's haunting Arkham's family. He wants to lure the Batman into the asylum to trap him, essentially. So that was like the whole plan going on. So there's a bit of a twist there. And so Cavendish and Batman like begin to fight, and Cavendish drops the razor. So Dr. Ruth Adams takes the razor and slashes Cavendish's throat. So I think like the imagery with the bat and trapping the bat and all that is like really hard to pick up on at first. Like my first read through of it, I definitely didn't catch that part of it. But taking the time to like read it again and then like read the script to like really confirm what's going on is like a cool way to like experience this book. And it's like a much better wrap up sort of for the story, or like finale, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on a lot of that. I'm really glad you did that extra work.
Yeah, because I was like really, because I know that this is like a really symbolic book and there's like a lot going on that isn't always like shown through exposition. So right. It's cool that they had the fucking whole script in the back, because it's cool to like jump back and forth. The only thing that I kind of wish that this book, I don't know how they would do it, but like have like the script on like one page and then like the actual page on the other page.
Yeah.
And like just do that a bunch of times. I feel like that would be like a really effective way to experience this book.
So I've seen that with some books. They're not like the comics themselves where they have it all in the front. It's like, I think I have one for like Watchmen. It's called like the annotations.
Yeah.
So they show the page and they kind of describe everything that's going on and like kind of everything that people pick up on, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I think I would have preferred that too. Cause then like you have to go back to try and find like whatever page it is.
Yeah. There was a lot of jumping back and forth, but I think it's kind of a cool like finale, I guess. And there's a point that Dr. Cavendish makes where Batman's like, you're sick, like I can help you. And then he's like, I'm sick, have you looked in a mirror lately? And then it's just like, yeah, I guess Batman is like in a bat suit trying to do whatever he's trying to do. So he like makes a good point there too. So after all that's done, Batman leads Ruth Adams out, but he asks to get Two-Face's coin back. And so he returns back to the inmates of Arkham, and he convinces Joker that it should be up to Two-Face to decide Batman's fate. And then he gives him the coin. So Two-Face flips the coin and it lands on the non-scratched up side. So they end up setting Batman free. Joker says that Batman like will always have a spot in Arkham or whatever. He's just kind of like insinuating that he's insane, but he's going back out into the world. But the twist here as well is that Two-Face by himself, when he's like all alone, reveals that the coin is the scratch side up. But he was able to make his own decision to set Batman free anyway.
Right.
So, which in a weird way, in a nice way, I guess, shows that he was making like his own kind of growth and development.
Yeah, and I love that for him.
Like that was, because like I didn't notice that at first, like when he flips the coin, you see it like almost land into his hand. And then he just says, he goes free. But then at the end, he like opens up his hand and it's the scratch side. And then he like knocks over his tower of like tarot cards that he was using for decisions. And it's just like a really nice thing for Two-Face.
Yeah, I definitely like that bit. I think that was kind of my favorite part of the book,
yeah,
writing wise.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it, basically.
Yeah, that's it. That's the story. Big happy ending.
Big happy ending.
Kind of.
It was just like Batman goes in there and then comes out.
Yeah, and he kind of just like saves one person and he ends up killing the other.
Right.
So anyway, so now we'll go into some back matter matters.
Back matter matters.
And God damn it, it's the biggest back matter we've ever had on this show because it's...
Can't beat it.
It's like, what, 100 and...
I think it's 111.
111 pages of back matter, most of which is the script, every single part of the script of this book, which I think is very cool if, one, you're like interested in how comics are made or pursuing writing or whatever in general. You can take a look at that. I think that Grant Morrison is definitely a bit of overkill as far as like setting up the scene or setting up what the symbolism is or what he was thinking about like at that time.
I mean, I think if you have like an idea of what you want, then you should definitely put it down because then you might get something that you don't want. Because like, think about it. You write a script. I send it to you because the idea is in my head.
Yeah.
And then you read what I put, but you might have like a different idea in your head. You spend like a day working on a page just to send it back to me and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Or like, that's not what I had in my head.
I guess it would be good. I guess that is good because Grant Morrison's like, here's what I'm thinking and I want it to relate to like this part of religion, or I had like this dream, so I want to portray this vibe. If he like goes into that a lot, Dave probably doesn't like follow a lot of like what the panel descriptions are. He just kind of like, it seems like he kind of does his own thing, but maybe he is just kind of playing to what sort of vibe Grant Morrison wanted to be on the page. So maybe it is good that he had all those.
I think if someone gave me one of his pages and I would just like forget about what I didn't like.
Yeah.
Or like what wasn't what I had in my head, you know, because I'd be like, holy shit, I can't tell you to fix this.
Yeah, I know. Like,
no, I don't like it.
I doubt that Dave McKean gets any notes, you know.
Yeah.
Like, make the Joker scarier.
What,
you know?
Editor would dare, you know?
Anybody that was working on this that's not Grant Morrison is probably wildly intimidated just by Dave McKean.
Absolutely.
With how crazy it is. So, yeah, we get all the script there. There's the there's two, like, creator bios that goes in, like, Grant Morrison.
There's some character bios.
Yes, there is. So all of the villains that were in Arkham Asylum, there's, like, very quick descriptions kind of what they are, but they're in like the crazy lettering as well. So I didn't really take the time to read all those, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it was definitely illegible.
But yeah, for the creator bios, there's one for Grant Morrison. We all kind of know him, but Dave McKean, lives in England. He studied design, illustration, and film at Berkshire College of Art. And what was the book they did? Dave has illustrated two comics at this time, both with writer Neil Gaiman, and it was Violent Cases, published by Escape in 1987, and he won the Eagle and Mechan Awards. And then he also did Black Orchid, which is published by DC in 1988. And he was only nominated for an Eisner Award. I can't imagine why he didn't get it.
Who the fuck won?
I don't know. Like, it's probably just some shitty book.
I know.
Yeah. I wonder what he's done since then.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get all of the scripts. There's like an afterword, but I didn't want to read it, so I didn't. And then there's some like quick sketch layouts from Dave McKean for like most of the pages, or at least most of the big pages. And what's weird is that the layouts are more like, even though they're like quick sketches, they seem like more traditional comic layouts,
mm-hmm.
where there's like square panels and stuff, but that's like never what ends up going on the page. So I... Like, there's clearly, like, a lot of thought that goes between, like, his thumbnails and, like, the actual page. So it's kind of interesting to see that.
Yeah, I think probably how he approached it was, like, all right, what's an easy way to set this up?
Yeah.
And then once you kind of understand what's in the panels, you can, like, shave it down to whatever you need and then organize it however you want to have that, like, extra background stuff that he has.
So he basically just draws it twice. Like, one to get the story beats kind of in there, and then the second time he just fucks it all up, but then, like, keeps the story beats.
This sketch of Batman probably took, like, a minute, but it's better than, like, any Batman I could draw.
I know. Like,
and this is, yeah, this is just, like, the quick sketch.
Yeah.
Of, like, what he needed.
It's awesome.
So, yeah, a lot of those.
Once you get past all that, you can see, like, the original cover for the book. And then you eventually get to the clay mask that was used as a base for the photo paint collage images of the Joker. So yeah, he like, I'm pretty sure he actually made like a clay mask, and it's fucking horrifying.
Dude, can you imagine just like having that in your house?
He's like, oh yeah, this is the Joker that I use.
If I had that just in my office, it like gets dark up here.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
it's just staring at you.
And what's terrifying is like when I open the door, I have to go around the open door to get to the light switch. Like it's not placed in a proper place.
So if that was just in the closet right there, then
it would scare the shit out of me.
Yeah. And then there's like an illustration that he did for a charity auction. It's weird that he would draw the Joker for like a charity auction.
I don't think it's like for kids or anything, but
probably not. But yeah.
It's more what you get out of it.
And then there's a convention sketch that is an insanely detailed Joker holding up a Joker
card. Can you fucking imagine?
Let me sketch something up for you.
Dude, I feel like I would hate so many collectors. Just like going in their house or whatever.
And you're like, you have.
Seeing this shit on their wall. And I'm like, no fucking way.
Like.
I hate you. Like, I can't. I don't think I could like a person that would have something like this in their house, knowing what it is.
Yeah.
And like they're just like the only one that has this only thing.
Annoys the fuck out of me.
Annoys the shit out of me.
Because I want that.
Yeah, be like, no, give me that. I want it more than you.
Like, Dave McKean is obviously like his own breed of artist, but like I want to get in early on an artist now, like collect their art, who's going to fucking blow up. It's just hard to see, like, obviously who's going to blow up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily look at it that way, but
like, just for like me, like I want to get something from an artist when he's like supporting them, obviously now on the stage that they're at now, and then when they blow up, be like, yeah, like 20 years ago I got a commission
which is probably like how it works,
it is like, maybe, I mean, I can't imagine that Joker piece wasn't like super expensive, but like I don't know, I guess it's interesting to see who's gonna like blow up pretty soon, I guess,
and be considered like a legend.
Yeah, and you're like, I just remember reading his Batman.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, anyway, so that's a back matter. This is an absolute gotta have it with candy corn on it, because it's scary.
Ooh.
But yeah, this is like crazy, and it definitely holds up. Like, this is unlike anything that probably ever will be in a Batman comic ever again, just because it's so crazy.
Like, you couldn't like not only like recreate this, but like make something like it.
You can't like do a sequel, you know, to this if you don't have like the original people on it.
Uh-huh. So I would rate this, gotta have it.
Yeah.
One of those like Cold Stone like signatures. Those ones that like,
maybe like the Halloween signatures.
Like one that you haven't tried before that is like super good, but like you probably won't get again.
Yeah.
Like, I just pulled up like some of them. The Almost Baked Banana Bread. Probably delicious. But,
okay.
But I'm not going to get like this, like a banana bread ice cream every time I go to Cold Stone.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I think I'm okay just like reading it like the one time.
Mm-hmm.
I might like, you know, get nervous just to like read it again, because I had to buy this, so like I own it now. So I can
digitally?
Yeah, I own it digitally. Because of like, I guess it would be just to see the art again.
Yeah.
Because I think you gave me a pretty good representation of like the things that I missed in the story.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I just kind of go back to things and like reread things because of the writing,
mm-hmm.
you know. So anyway, good stuff.
Yeah, very good. I hope Dave McKean's doing good with whatever he's doing.
Bless his heart.
So with that, we'll go into the pull list, : shove it in your box.
The pull list, the pull list. What did you shove in your box?
And god damn it, do we have a big ass pull list?
Sure do.
For this week. I actually didn't go to the comic shop today, so.
Neither did I, but.
Because I've been busy doing things, but I know that Batman the Imposter came out by Andrea Sorrentino.
Oh, so I'm gonna be it?
He did the art. The writing was by Mattson Tomlin.
Okay. What is that about?
I don't know. It's Andrea Sorrentino Batman. Just pick it up.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So I know that came out. I just don't know what else came out. But I read a bunch of books.
Okay. Well.
On the plane.
We got The Incredible Unteens number 3.
That's coming important.
Out. And I guess that always comes out the same week as Black Hammer Reborn. So that's pretty cool.
Oh,
so
nice.
We got that one, number 4 of that. Maze Book number 2 came out.
Oh, shit. I got to pick that up.
Yep. We got Firepower 16, the Joker Puzzle Box, number 3.
Oh, I missed number 2.
There's a Chip Zdarsky cover on this one.
He's doing all of them.
He does all the covers?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or at least he did number 1. I'm pretty sure he did number 2 as
okay,
well.
Cool. And like you were saying, Dark Ages, number 2. And then I believe Justice League Last Ride, number 6.
Yep. That came out as well.
So that's the ones that are on my list.
To eventually read.
To eventually buy and read.
Yeah. But we were on a plane and traveling in general for a total of probably like 30-something hours.
Dude, we were on like 7 hours. Planes.
Yeah. Like the amount of traveling it takes to get to the other side of the earth is unbelievable.
Disgusting.
Yeah. So, but that did give me a bunch of opportunity to read a lot of things. I even reread a thing, which I barely do.
Wow.
But I reread Green Lantern, the Sinestro Corps War, that big compilation that's on Comixology.
Okay.
And it is a lot, and I can't recommend it because it's just pure Green Lantern stuff, and you have to kind of know, you have to like be a fan of Green Lantern to like really enjoy how fucking cool it is kind of deal.
How long is it?
This one, so I don't really like how it was collected because it included the spinoffs from, so like there's, at this time there's the main Green Lantern title, which was the Geoff Johns, Ivan Reis, like really, really good book. And then there was the, I guess, spinoff book, but it was also like its own ongoing. It was Sinestro Corps, the Green Lantern Corps. So there's Green Lantern, which focuses on just like Hal Jordan and like the human Green Lanterns. And then Green Lantern Corps focuses on just like what's going on with like the whole, all the Green Lanterns as a whole. And I think like this was like a title event. So everything that was going on was happening in Green Lantern, basically, like all the important stuff. But they also put the Green Lantern Corps stuff in between the Green Lantern things. So it was collected kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
And like, I guess the Green Lantern Corps things that happened in there kind of progressed the story, but not that much. Like it could have been like a footnote in like Green Lantern, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like with a lot of those like big event collections, they have like spinoffs and stuff in there.
Especially back in the day. Like this was pretty much before. But so this is like the first time that the Yellow Lanterns were basically like a big threat. And it was like Sinestro basically ambushing like the Green Lanterns with like this new like yellow like lantern people. So like that was like the first instance of that happening. And there's like a lot of like really big things that sort of happen in this to set themselves up for like Blackest Night, which is like that huge event that DC mm-hmm. did. But it's just like the scale of it is also really cool as well, because there's just like so much happening. And it's just, it's really great, honestly. I like it a lot. But we probably won't ever read it on this because there's a lot going on. And like he fixes continuity to like make it more interesting in here. And like the continuity itself is kind of like difficult to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, I love it a lot.
Cool.
I also read the second trade of Matt Fraction in David Aja's Hawkeye.
Yep.
And that shit's pretty cool too.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I like the how like that trade focuses on Hawkeye's love life a little bit more and how he like always fucks it up.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty funny. There was the Comixology original We Have Demons that came out.
Oh, yes. I downloaded that. Yeah.
Yeah, from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo.
How was that?
I read it and it's probably not for me.
Okay.
But I love seeing Greg Capullo's art a lot. Like, he brings, like, the whole team from, like, Batman New 52 run.
Yeah, I think he's, like, the same inker.
Yeah. And everything looks very cool. I just don't know if, like, the story is for me. I'm going to give issue 2 a try because it, like, really kicks into, like, what the concept of the book is.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's written very well for Comixology.
Okay.
As far...
Oh, okay. Like, the guided reading or...
Yes, or I should say, I think the art is done very well for Comixology, because when I was like flipping my phone sideways to like read that way, I noticed that a lot of the times some of the panels wouldn't get cut off. Like
like, so it's like the perfect like scale for like a phone screen.
Which is kind of interesting that they did it that way.
No, that's awesome.
It wasn't that way all the time, but like for the most part, it was kind of like that. And I was like, this is kind of neat.
Did you read Clear?
I haven't read Clear yet, but I have it downloaded.
Same.
That's the one I was like most excited about, I think.
I just kind of forgot what most of the concepts were, and I'll just kind of like download them as they come out.
Yeah.
And then
there's like,
go from there.
There's that one with Francis Manapul, and I haven't seen him on a book in forever, I feel like.
Yeah, I know.
And then there's one with Cesco Francavilla. That's like the horror movie one.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that one too, because I haven't seen Francesco Francavilla in a new book in a while.
Right.
So pretty cool. I also read Werewolves of Montiplier by Jason.
Oh, how was it?
That one was a little bit harder for me to understand too.
Okay.
I didn't really know what the point of it was until like the last 10 pages, and then everything happened and I'm like, okay. So I liked the I Killed Adolf Hitler one like a lot more.
Sure.
This one still has like, I did like this one a lot. It's just like, I didn't understand what was going on until like the very end. And I don't know if I understand all the symbolism yet.
Yeah, I think he still writes some things like a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I've read multiple of them and like gotten something out of it. The other one that I remember really liking was the Left Bank Gang.
Okay.
That's like a heist book.
And oh, nice.
It's like, it's just like, he's got all these like concepts that he just does in his style.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
I love seeing it. Yeah.
It's really fun. So that was the other, that's my other favorite from him.
This one, like, I think one of the reasons why I like didn't like it as much as I Killed Adolf Hitler is that the concept was, if you're like a werewolf, you're like a thief.
Uh huh.
And I couldn't tell the difference between the werewolf and like the normal like character that is normally like Jason or whatever.
Did he just have like a little bit more fur?
He just had like a little bit spikier fur.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, okay, so is he part of the werewolves? But he was acting as a werewolf, as like a thief to like steal from what the werewolves would normally steal from or something like that. But I didn't understand what was going on until like the very end. And I'm like, okay, so in the beginning he was acting like that, but he wasn't actually. And then he got turned into a werewolf and there's like things that were happening like that. Didn't get it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started reading, and I'm almost done with the first part of Black Hammer Age of Doom.
Oh.
So at this point, I know that Madame Dragonfly and Colonel Weird know a lot more than they give off, mm-hmm. and they got some shit that's going on there. And like, I'm on like the last issue of that, of part one. So
you finished like the first run of Black Hammer?
Yeah. So like, there's the new Black Hammer, the daughter of Black Hammer.
Yeah.
It's now Black Hammer. And there's like that part where Black Hammer was like in this like weird abstract limbo sort of thing. And she's like opening a bunch of doors, and then mm-hmm. she opens one door and it's like the Sweet Tooth universe. And she sees like the Sweet Tooth character. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's Jeff Lemire.
Age of Doom is a lot of fun. It's definitely like insanely trippy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think that's pretty much everything I read. Oh no. And then I caught up on Green Lantern, like the current Green Lantern.
Okay.
And it's pretty good.
It's good to hear.
It's a cool concept because basically all the Guardians are dead. The central power battery that powers all the Green Lantern rings exploded.
Right.
And then all of the Green Lantern rings stopped working. And the only person that has a Green Lantern ring is the main character of the Far Sector series.
Right.
Because she has like a special ring. And then...
that has glasses.
Yeah, she's the one with the sweet glasses.
Yeah.
Probably the coolest like Green Lantern costume, I would say. It's like right up there with the Kyle Rayner one, the original one, which is like my favorite. And then Kid Lantern has like the gauntlet. And so they're the only two people with like Green Lantern-esque powers because their stuff doesn't come from the central power battery.
Okay.
But they're trying to figure out what happened, but they know that it was like a focused attack, because if the central power battery blew up, all the Green Lanterns would still have like juice in their ring until like those run out of power. Essentially. Mm-hmm. So they know it was a focus attack because all the rings stopped working too. So like clearly something happened.
Right.
And they're just trying to figure it out. And that's gotten pretty spicy.
That's cool. Like a space mystery book.
Yeah. It's like a space planned attack happened to like a police force, and they're trying to figure out what happened. And you're also seeing like how some of the like famous Green Lanterns are doing without like a power ring. Mm-hmm. So John Stewart was like trapped on like this random Earth. Or this random planet, and he's like just kind of surviving for the moment. And then there were some like space pirate gangster people that found out all the Green Lanterns don't have a ring, so they were like hunting them down. So just John Stewart being stranded there endangered the people of that planet because these gangsters were trying to like kill this Green Lantern.
So if their ring's not working, do they still have like the costume?
No.
Oh, okay. So how do you find them?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Anyway.
Well, actually, John Stewart's like a pretty famous Green Lantern. So I think they're going after like the big ones.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot of really interesting ideas. It's just all at once. So I'm interested to see like what the explanation is by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no idea what Hal Jordan's doing, but he's in there somewhere. So yeah.
I'm
excited to be caught up on it.
Yeah, that's always nice. Did you watch anything?
I watched tons of things.
Tons of things.
I watched Llamageddon.
How'd that go?
Which is a book. It's a Amazon movie, or it was on Amazon Prime. I don't think they produced this film.
Yeah.
But it's about a llama that has laser eyes and kills people.
Yeah.
Really good.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. It's like, clearly they knew that they were making a bad movie, which didn't make it as fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as fun as, like, Sharknado, I guess. Because they, like...
I think they probably really tried on, like, the first one.
Yeah, I think they did, too. Like, the best bad movies are when they actually try. Like, Predator. The best Predator.
Yeah, the best Predator.
Yeah, that movie's fun because it's bad, but they were trying.
He was really, like, trying to reinvent the wheel and, like, bring this back.
But it's clear in, like, Llamageddon that they just know that they're making a bad movie, so they just, like, do things that only bad movie makers would do. There's literally a character that changes his shirt every scene.
Huh.
And, like, they don't mention it at all, but it's like, okay, clearly, like, you know what you're doing. But anyway, don't watch it. It's a bad movie. I don't even know why I brought it up. I watched Knives Out for the first time. Fucking incredible.
Yeah, did you like it?
I love it a lot.
Super good.
Like, such a great idea for a whodunit, because, like, you didn't know that somebody done it. You thought that she done it, but then someone ended up doing the done it.
Yep. Someone done it.
Someone did end up dunning it, and it was Chris Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler.
Wow.
Really great movie, though.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I was really high on Rian Johnson just because I, like, love The Last Jedi. That's, like, a top three Star Wars movie for me.
Okay.
And so, like, I was like, I want to see, like, I was definitely looking forward to, like, what he was doing next.
Yeah,
and I think there's going to be, they already started working on a sequel to Knives Out.
He was, like, auctioning it, like, a bunch of places and got, like, a bunch of money.
Yeah, I think Netflix ended up getting it. I can't remember, though.
I don't think so.
But anyway, what else, Nathan? Tell me.
So I did Knives Out, did Llamageddon. I did, I watched The Departed because it was free on the plane.
Good movie.
I'd never seen that movie before. But yeah, very good movie.
It's, like, one of the best, like,
I watched a lot of movies that had complicated storylines, technically. Like, they weren't very linear.
I think Mom watched that, too.
On the plane?
Yeah, The Departed.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. I just love the concept of, just, like, the concept of it, where there's, like, a main gang boss, and he's got a mole in the cop, and, like, the police force, but the police force has a mole in the gang, and they're, like, trying to, like, figure out who each other are.
Yeah.
Fucking golden concept.
Absolutely. Who directed that?
Martin Scorsese.
Oh, that sounds right.
Yeah. And then just, like, the actors that were in it were very good.
Yeah, star-studded cast.
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg, being a dick. I love it.
Yeah, it's the best kind of Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. And then...
like a nice Mark Wahlberg.
I'm missing a movie that I watched. Whiplash.
Mm, yes.
I watched that for the first time. I knew it got, like, a bunch of Oscars and stuff because J.K. Simmons yells a bunch in it. And he's very good at yelling.
Yeah.
And he's good at calling people gay or whatever.
he's terrifying.
Yeah, he is, like... It's, like, really just crazy how someone can act that good and be that intimidating, and it's just over jazz. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whenever I see, like a jazz movie that's, like, good, I'm like, damn, I wish I knew how to jazz, you know?
Yeah, I know. Anytime I see any jazz musician, I'm like, God, they're so good.
They're, like, it's, like, another level for, like, music.
Honestly, like, most of the musicians in, like, the church band I play in, they, like, that's just what they do on Sunday. You know,
yeah,
and, like, play at, like, church or whatever, but they're all, like, musicians, like, regularly.
Yeah.
Like, the drummer is, like, a studio drummer. Like, he sits in on things and just, like, plays drums when they need to.
Yeah.
And things like that. And so I'm, like, always insanely intimidated. I'm like, you guys are so good.
Yeah.
And like, I don't even deserve to be here. Like,
I know. And, like, it portrays, like, the amount of dedication that goes into, like, being great genuinely at music.
You have to know, like, front and back, and, like,
it's got to ruin your life
to the point where, like, you don't even like it that much.
Yeah,
but you are good, so I guess that's cool. But, like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's I know that, like, you got to get to a point where you're, like, so good at something, it's, like, kind of annoying to stay that good at it, because it's definitely, like, a diminishing skill.
It's got to, like, that's got to be just all you do. Like, you don't have time for anything else.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They portray that very well in here.
Right.
And then I watched Baby Driver.
Have you seen that before?
Yeah. I just wanted to see it again.
Yeah.
Sophia hadn't watched it, so I'm like, this is a good movie. It's shitty on, like, the headphones that they gave you, because I don't have any, like, wired headphones.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's, like, very music-based.
Mm-hmm.
But since watching it the first time, I found out that whenever baby has one earphone in, you can only hear the music on the side speaker that yeah. have the earphone in, which I didn't notice because I was listening.
I think
to
you
it
can
on
only
speaker.
Really pick up on that unless like you're in a theater or you have like the headphones in.
Yeah. So like rewatching with headphones is a different way to like experience it. And I think it was pretty cool.
That was a,
so I think
Edgar,
that was everything.
Edgar Wright movie.
Edgar Wright. Yeah.
Yeah. He's good.
He's got that new one coming out.
Last night
in Soho.
Soho.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see what that's about. Cause like, I like most of the things that I've seen that he has. And so this one just seemed like not something that was like by him.
Yeah. It seems like kind of just a typical movie, but I yeah. think that there's a concept in there that will be interesting. I just don't understand what the concept is based off the trailers.
Right. And so that's like my only hesitation towards it, but I'll like definitely see it.
Yeah. I like all of his stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Is that it?
Get it? That's everything.
Get it all? So the little amount that I did get to read was, I'm caught up on Afterlife with Archie.
Okay.
So
how much was that beyond the first trade?
Just another 5 issues.
Okay.
And so I kind of looked into it a little bit more. Yeah. Still Francesco and Roberto on it. And Roberto has like had like a pretty big career in like writing for television and movies and stuff like that. Mm. So I think that all like took off like around when this was like going on. And like Archie Comics still has it as like an ongoing series.
Really?
But because it's like not finished. Like I read the rest of it and it's not done. Like it's like left on a cliffhanger.
That sucks.
Or it's not like a cliffhanger. It's just like it's not done.
Not resolved.
You know, yeah, not resolved. I think the second trade's supposed to go to like issue 12, but there is no like second trade out. It's just like the first trade and then those individual
issues.
And
then
issues.
5 issues?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I had to download like 5 issues.
Interesting.
So he's got more. I guess he just hasn't taken the time to write it or whatever. But he's had like a banger career, like in writing for film and stuff.
Do you know what he's done?
I'd have to look it up. But
what's his name?
Roberto. It's a hard name.
Roberto Aguirre Sacasa.
Yeah, it's a hard name. So I guess he's had like a bunch of plays published, which is kind of wild. He wrote for like Glee for a couple years. He wrote on Supergirl. He's still a current writer, producer, creator, developer, showrunner for like Riverdale.
Yeah, I see that.
And then like that Sabrina show that got like really popular randomly. And then he's got like more like ongoing things that like are coming up. So
good for him, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Just give us more Afterlife with Archie.
It's like his job and he's already doing like Archie stuff. So maybe it's just like a lot.
Yeah.
But I definitely like the first trade a lot more because there were like a lot more zombies to it and it was more honed in on like that group or whatever.
Yeah, and people were dying a bunch.
The rest of it, it's like checking in on like the other parts of like the Archie universe, and it's not necessarily in that. It's like prequels to like that event happening.
Okay.
Like we get a whole issue on like Josie and the Pussycats, which is like that band or whatever that's in it. And I'm like, okay. And then we get like some Sabrina stuff and
some Buckethead stuff.
No. That's not his name, is it? Jughead.
Sorry, Jughead. Buckethead is something else.
Yeah. But there was like a little bit of that main cast kind of thing. And it was kind of, and they had like a prequel to like Betty in this universe and like kind of how she came up. And so like all that was fine, but I was just really hoping it was going to be like more zombie stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know how this will like, it feels like there could be like another like 20 issues, honestly, with how many like spinoffs these last couple issues were, but
I guess it just didn't happen.
Yeah. But the art was like badass, of course. So that was kind of like my favorite part.
Yeah. I recommend following Francesco Francavilla, whatever his name is, on Twitter. He posts a lot, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll definitely have to follow him. And then on the plane, they had Wrath of Man, which is the new Guy Ritchie movie. With Jason Statham.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Not as good as like his other movies that I've seen. I've heard like mixed reviews about it, but it was much better than what like people have been saying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shooting, you know, like it just seemed like the ending scene, it was like just like guns ablazing for like 10-15 minutes, you know.
It seems like it's kind of deal though.
Yeah So there was enough to the plot to where like it was like slightly confusing, but I still like kind of caught up. And then there's like the twist I didn't see coming and things like that.
It's cool.
And I'm mostly used to him doing like British stuff, which I kind of liked. But this one was like an American movie or American characters. So it just kind of seemed like almost like just like a typical Jason Statham movie.
Okay.
So that's pretty good. I watched the first 2 episodes of Ted Lasso.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever watched that?
No, but I know what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. I don't have Apple Plus, so I'd have to watch that, or I'd have to buy that in order to watch the rest of it, because they just had like the first two as like a teaser or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's fun.
Yeah, I've only heard good things about it.
Right, yeah. It was just me like just trying it. You know? And I guess there's a second season, so.
Yeah, second season, I think, just came out.
Yeah. I also watched Catch Me If You Can. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, but I can't think about what it is.
It's a Leonardo DiCaprio movie that has...
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Tom Hanks in it.
Yep.
He's, like, just does, like a bunch of check fraud stuff, and he's, like, on the run, and then Tom Hanks is just, like, chasing after him.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
All right.
I wouldn't say it's, like, super underrated or anything, but I definitely, like, liked it a lot. And, like, the themes to it were kind of, like... obvious, but it wasn't like they told you what it is kind of thing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of, I was able to get a lot of like symbolism from facial expressions and stuff like that, and kind of like the point of the movie without someone like telling me it.
Yeah,
that, I appreciate
that. Leonardo guy is pretty good at acting.
Pretty good. Yeah, he's real good.
He was in that the Departed movie.
Yeah,
that I've seen recently.
Exactly. I guess this movie is based off of like a true story, which is like nuts.
Oh.
Because this dude sold, like, millions in, like, bank fraud and, like, check fraud. Because I think it was, like, based in, like, the 70s. So, things weren't, like, quite as quick. And it was really easy to fake things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Taxi Driver. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't. But, I know what it is. It's one of those movies where it's, like, you should probably watch this.
Yeah, it was fine. You can honestly just watch, like, the last 20 minutes of it. And I think you'll get the gist of it. The rest of it, he's just driving a taxi around.
Cool.
A lot of people were...
Isn't that one a Martin Scorsese one?
Yes, and he's also in it.
Oh, okay, cool.
This is like a movie that everyone was like comparing like the Joker to,
because yeah.
It is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that. And fucking what's his name? Robert De Niro is so young in this. It's like shocking, and he takes like his shirt off, and he's like super skinny and stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, this is weird.
Yeah,
it's like 72. I think the movie was made.
Crazy to think that he's been acting for a very long time.
Yeah, and he was like skinny at one point.
Yeah,
so that was all right. And then I watched Mars Attacks. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Yeah. It was on Netflix, so I was just like scrolling through Netflix like trying to find shit to like download.
Yeah,
so I can watch on the plane. And I've like just like seen like the little the Martian like in places, and so I just figured there's something in like pop culture that I just like needed to see, I guess. Let me read you this cast listing, dude. This shit is like an ensemble cast.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's see here. So we got Jack Nicholson.
Okay. Wow.
We got Pierce Brosnan.
Nice.
Yeah. We got Sarah Jessica Parker.
I love her.
Love her. We got Danny DeVito.
What?
Yes, sir. We got Martin Short.
Wow.
Michael J. Fox.
My gosh.
I know. Oh, Natalie Portman.
What? Is she even alive? When did this movie come out?
96.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess
and Jack Black.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
I gotta watch this movie.
Guess who the director is?
Who?
Tim Burton.
I had no idea.
This is a Tim Burton directed movie.
Was that is that the original?
There's only one, yeah. This movie was based off of some cards that Topps came out with. Just like some Martian cards.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just like all they had to go off of, and they wrote like a whole movie off of it.
Jeez.
This thing, it was honestly like a lot of fun.
Really?
It was like, it wasn't like a good movie by any means, but like I really liked watching it, you know?
Yeah.
It's super campy, and like, then again, like this is also the same year that like Independence Day came out. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely super different as far as like alien movies.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I was honestly laughing most of the time just because of how like, but I think it was like almost like intentional. Like how, not like cheesy, but like how funny like some of the things are in this movie.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was really fun.
I've always seen like that alien dude with like the brain sort of thing and like the glass dome.
Yeah.
You know, I've always like seen that, but I've never seen like what made that popular.
Yeah, exactly.
I think John Layman wrote a Mars Attacks comic, actually.
I looked into that. They have Mars Attacks Judge Dredd.
I think that's one that...
I looked into it.
No, there's I just Googled Mars Attacks comic, and I see Layman.
Really?
Yeah. It was just Mars Attacks, though.
Did he write that?
Yeah, he wrote it. It's from IDW.
Okay. I think there's a couple of them.
Looks like they've been at Dynamite and IDW.
Yeah.
That's a very IDW book.
Right, yeah. So...
Oh, he's done multiple Mars Attacks books.
Mars Attacks, Red Sonja.
Oh, yeah. That's the most recent one he did.
Really?
Yeah. That dude's always doing crossovers.
I love that guy. He's so funny.
We should totally read Alien versus Predator versus Judge Dredd by him.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's such a fun book, actually.
It's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was... The thing is, like, when Dad asked me, like, if I had any movies, I'm like, I downloaded Mars Attacks, and he, like, immediately knew what I was talking about. So, like, people know this.
Yeah.
You know?
People... I've just never thought to, like...
To watch it.
To seek it out.
Yeah, I didn't... I just kind of... came across it, I'm like, I think I've been meaning to watch this, you know.
Yeah,
like nice. I've seen like a tattoo of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've seen like toys and stuff, so I just kind of wanted to see like what it was in like pop culture, and yeah. Maybe it was something for me. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I'll never rewatch it.
Right,
but anyway, yeah, that was
glad you experienced that.
Definitely.
that hidden gem that's not very hidden.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's like a cult classic or anything like that. I think everyone just kind of feels the same about it.
Yeah, good stuff.
Did you watch the finale of What If, Nathan?
No, I haven't. Yeah, I've been busy, but I watched Squid Game.
Did you watch at least the one before that?
I haven't watched any.
Oh, man.
I'm busy. I'm moving. I'm doing things.
All right. Maybe some other time, I guess. Next episode, we'll talk about
it. We also picked up some Greek comics.
Oh, we sure did.
Yeah, I picked up... I think this is like a comics magazine, technically, but it's called Nonstop Comics. It has the whole first issue of Kill or Be Killed in it, but in Greek,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty awesome. And then there's also two additional comics right after it. Or no, there's like more.
Is it like actual like
it's listed
articles and
there's like an interview with Ed Brubaker that I'll never know what he's saying because it's all in Greek.
Yeah,
but he talks about the book, and I'm sure it's very interesting. I just don't know because it's in Greek.
Yeah,
and then there's like actual Greek books, and like there's some incredible coloring in Greek comics that I've noticed. But there's one that looks like it's part of the Vietnam War, and then there's like this other war book that's in here as well. That looks like Mike Diodato drew it or something. Like it's not him, but it looks like similar to him.
Yeah, it definitely does.
So like, I have been looked at. This might be like a John Carter of Mars thing too. I don't know. It's crazy though. Like Greek comics are just cool. And then there's I don't really know what this is, but there's a picture that's very clearly Mickey Mouse's hand, and in between his two fingers is a cigarette over some whiskey. And I don't know what it is, but I'm very interested.
Hardcore, man.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have a Greek comic book now. So that's nice. And you also have one.
Yeah, I just found like a Fantastic Four one that was in like Greek.
Yeah. Did you open it up at all and like flip through it?
No. I still have it over there. I'm like debating like whether or not, because it came in like that cardboard thing.
They folded it in half to fit it in the little milk carton basket.
I know, it's still pretty cool though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might. I'll probably just flip through it.
Yeah, just do it.
Like, it definitely seems like a Silver Age kind of book, just like kind of with the coloring and stuff like that. We didn't really go to a comic shop. It was just on a newsstand.
Yeah, it was a comic shop.
Yeah.
That's how comics used to be sold, just newsstand.
Yeah, but they actually have comic shops in Greece, in Athens.
Yeah.
But we just didn't go any. We
should have.
We probably should have.
Yeah.
We have a whole podcast about comics, and we didn't go to another comic shop in another country.
I don't know, like, what I would have picked up, you know?
All the shit's in English there.
Is it?
Yeah, like, I was looking at, like, as I was looking around for comic shops, I was looking at the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's in English.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
Damn, we should have gone.
It would have been like going to a comic shop here.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
We just weren't ever near one.
Right.
Well, maybe next time we go to Greece.
Yeah.
Which I don't plan on doing very soon, but... Yeah, I guess that's the show.
Yeah, it definitely was.
What do we have planned to read next week for the next spooky book?
What are we gonna read next week?
We got either Gideon Falls or Silver Coin.
Did that trade come out?
Yeah, it's out.
Let's do that just because it's fresh.
Silver Coin? Yeah, it's fresher.
It's a fresh book.
Sounds good.
So yeah, Silver Coin by Michael Walsh and a bunch of writers.
Yep, indeed.
So yeah, that's the show. Thanks for listening this week. If you want to reach out to us, send us a nice message maybe, or a recommendation, you can email us at tradewaiterspod@gmail.com or on Twitter at tradewaiterspod. I'm also on Twitter at more like Nate Thick.
Dan and Dividad.
You should definitely follow us on Twitter. I've been posting some memes lately.
Definitely some memes. You could follow us on TikTok.
On TikTok.
At Trade Waiters.
Yeah.
We be posting.
For sure.
We be tweeting.
And that's it.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening.
All right. Peace.
All right. Bye.